Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Dual Screens Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me, he's in one of those other boxes. He's right over here. He's Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I'm good. I feel like it was a bad week to stop huffing glue. I have a little bit of a regret about that, but yeah. I'm doing all right.
Turns out, great week to start lacquering your furniture. Like, wow, we are having a great time. It's been too cold to open the window, so we went lacquering up all of our wooden furniture and feeling real, real good about it. Back on the show, joining us again for a return. This is the first time on the Dual Screens Podcast. Our guest was on Nintendo Dual Screens Podcast way back in the day. But we want to welcome back to the show Miguel Sternberg, the developer of They Bleed Pixels, a fiendishly difficult beat-em-up platformer inspired by H.P. Lovecraft and classic horror. Miguel, welcome back to the show. How have you been?
Good, considering the weird year. It's great to be back on the podcast, though.
Well, we're very excited to have you back. Thank you so much for coming back. The last time we saw you was at PAX East, and you showed us They Bleed Pixels. If I remember correctly, it might have been like you just got it running on Switch, or like I don't remember 100%, but I think that was the case. Like, it was like, here, it's finally on here. Look at it, play it. And that was the last time we got our hands on it. It was the last time we saw you and spoke to you. So what has happened from with development and everything like that since PAX East?
From then, it's basically been sort of like getting the game running is kind of the easiest part because it doesn't need to sort of follow any of the guidelines for the console. Doesn't really have to work with the online. So we've basically been going through all of that, making sure like we can't reference keyboard controls in the tutorial. So that had to be taken out. Just basically going through all of those little things, tuning a few performance issues, getting leaderboards working, which I've discovered with both of the games we've been working to bring to consoles is like the worst part of console porting is, yeah, the leaderboard stuff on consoles, like all of them is, there's not a ton of games with leaderboards. So I think they kind of like don't test that such stuff super well, don't like work to really engineer it so it works smoothly. So it's a lot of sort of writing around how they decided to make things work. So that's like the same case with sort of Russian Subway Dogs, which is coming to everything but Switch. as soon as I can get the last little bits of stuff working with it. But in the case of They Bleed Pixels, I wasn't the programmer. I was sort of helping out, making sure that the game still played the same way across the console, since I know it better than anyone else. And then getting all of the artwork changes that needed to be made. So yeah, basically like pretty much nonstop from when you saw me at PAX. It's just been getting through that process of getting all the little things right. And then, you know, cutting a new trailer, et cetera. And now it is available on Switch. And it's been great awesome. To find a game out on console because I've been at this with Spooky Squid for, I guess it's 11 years now. And always a plan to get something out on console, and sometimes it takes a while.
Well, we're definitely get into that, but before we do, I want to tell our listeners, hey listeners, if you're new here, this is the Dual Screens Podcast, the world's number one indie developer interview podcast. Probably everyone in the gaming industry, be it a programmer, an artist, or a voice actor, they have a story to tell, and we want to be their podcast to do it. The show posts each and every Thursday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean, and the video version of the podcast goes up on youtube.com/dualscreens.tv. So please, if you're watching there, consider leaving a thumbs up and hitting that subscribe button and all that fun stuff. All right, so let's get into that. So 11 years, and this is the first time you're getting something on console. What kind of led us to this point? I mean, obviously it was a goal of yours. So what had been kind of the speed bumps in the road there?
In the case of They Bleed Pixels, it's a custom engine. So it isn't something where we can just find any shop that does like Unity and get it transferred over. So a lot of the time I was just sort of like trying to find someone who would do it sort of for either a reasonable price or royalty rate, the sort of business side of things, to make sure you know, we'd actually get some of the profits, because that can be a problem when partnering up with publishers. And weirdly, sort of, we came full circle because the person who ended up doing it is a guy called Ethan Lee, who does a lot of porting for Linux and Mac. And he did our original Linux and Mac ports. And he was just like, "Oh, hey, I'm doing Switch stuff." And I was like, "Let's talk." And like, whereas there was literally a time we spent about a year trying to negotiate something with a publisher, I think we basically came to an agreement in like a week. It was super painless. I knew I could trust him. I knew he knew the engine well because he had already done ports. So it was, took a long time, but we sort of found the perfect person to work with. And he was under our nose the entire time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and this game still kicks my ass, like it did about, I want to say, 8 or so years ago when I first played it. It's one of those games where my fiance goes to me, "If you're gonna yell this much at a game, just put it down." I don't understand why. He's like, "Just put it down. If you're so angry, just put, if it sucks, put it down." I'm like, "It doesn't suck. I suck at it." And it's like, I feel now that it's in my hands, the risk of breaking my Switch has grown exponentially.
Please don't break your Switch.
They do a fine enough job breaking themselves, you know, those Joy-Con.
Why is your game a pain in the ass, Miguel? Why is it designed to make me hate myself? It's a question all of my ability.
I'm not a rage gamer. Like, I'm playing Spelunky 2 right now just to relax, and I die.
Oh, to relax, he says. Okay.
And then you play Meat Boy to
Just to unwind after a nice long
Yeah, of
day. Yeah,
course.
sure.
Like, I find that sort of that process of repeating and learning to be really kind of cathartic. And so not that way with every genre, but with sort of hard platformers. And I think probably making They Bleed Pixels made me more that way because I've played through the entire game like dozens and dozens of times, and through individual levels like hundreds of times. So I'm used to dying at my own game as well. So really, like when I'm making games, both They Bleed Pixels and Russian Subway Dogs, I'm not really necessarily trying to make it hard for hard's sake. I'm interested in games that kind of make the player really fully engage and understand all of their underlying systems and like how the physics work and such. And so the process of making games of that sort ends up making them more difficult than games that don't require that from players. So it's more that I'm sort of I'm interested in mastery and what that process of achieving mastery feels like playing a game. And kind of out of that, the difficulty comes out.
Right, but some of these jumps, dude, are like you need the most perfect precision to jump over these spikes. And I was having a moment because in most games that have like a slippery surface, you land on it and you move a little bit and then you stand still. But in your argument, like it's always propelling you left or right. I'm like, this son of a bitch.
So slippery surface is doing two things, and I guess we should go into the save system, the checkpoint system before this. So the checkpoint system, you basically have to earn your checkpoints through combat and through a small sort of like collectible that's scattered throughout the level. And when you sort of fill up this meter, you have a checkpoint that you can carry with you and put down any place that you can stand still. That also doesn't have anything damaging and moving near you. And so the way that the slippery surfaces work goes into that system because we wanted it to be something that wasn't necessarily dangerous on its own, but also would stop you from staying still so that you don't put a checkpoint in those areas.
Interesting.
So if we had allowed sort of a physics system that did allow you to sort of adjust and stay still, you could end up putting a checkpoint somewhere that might end up being incredibly bad for you.
Yes.
That's where that comes out of. Like a lot of these things come out of sort of how all of the different systems interact with each other, and then are like our overall goals for the game.
Can we talk a little bit about the art design in this game? Because I know the game, you know, you had mentioned, I think you said it was 8 years old at this point, but like what's old is new again to people that are going to get their hands on this for the first time. And also, you know, there's sort of this resurgence in the last 3 years, I want to say, really, of this pixel art, this beautiful, fully realized worlds in this pixel art style that, you know, left a lot to the imagination back in the day, but now we're kind of filling in those blanks with these beautiful pixels. And, you know, you've created here, you guys got like these beautiful cutscenes that draw you in instantly. And then it's just literally soaked in pixel blood. And it's almost like stark, like when you're first looking at it and you're seeing all of the blood, all of the, you know, the visceral images in front of you on this pixeled backdrop, it's almost like a juxtaposition of styles. Can you get a little bit into, you know, where this came from, you know, how decisions were made to go in this particular direction?
I think it was partially, one of the inspirations, and this was more for the game's combat, was the original Nidhogg. I was playing beta versions of it at events and such. The guy who created it brought it to Toronto for some of the events that the organization I helped start was running at the time at bars and such. And I really liked the combat, but I also thought it was interesting the way it sort of like had very minimal pixel art, but really nice animation. And so that was sort of also, along with the sort of combat system stuff, a big inspiration of like, okay, what if I simplify my pixel art style, but then just ramp the animation way up? And so the foreground stuff in They Bleed Pixels is all very simple. It's mostly black or white, almost like it was like a Mac game or something, like an old Mac game or a game, an original Game Boy game. But then we went wild with the animation. So I'd have to look it up. I think there's either like somewhere between 300 and 600 frames of animation for the main character.
Oh my God.
And I think around 60 different animation states. So different little bits of animation that it's using to sort of glue together the different moves. That's like a thing when you're doing indie games, you sort of have to decide what battles are you going to pick. So we're like, okay, we want to do really good animation. So let's simplify that foreground so that it's quick to iterate and try different things. And there's still like probably a month or two of animation work in that character overall, especially if you start putting in revisions and such. But if we'd gone for a really realistic style, we never would have finished the game. And then sort of to balance out the fact that the foreground is so simple, we did these really large, beautiful backgrounds full of different like scrolling layers and such, so that each place still has a really distinctive look because the entire background is this big like pixel art painting. So the style really came out of kind of like what battles we chose, who we were going to sort of fight, and where we were going to put our emphasis when making the game.
When you describe it like that, Andy, I don't know if you feel the same way, but it's almost like you're describing like a video game version of a Bob Ross painting, where everything kind of just looks like a bunch of stuff until he just kind of makes a couple of little strokes, and all of a sudden you're like, "Oh, it's a cabin! It's a cabin! He made a cabin! I get it now. It's a and then you kind of look at it like this, and you're like, "Oh, that's a really beautiful fucking cabin! Look at that cabin!" And but you know, when you're seeing it kind of happening, and that kind of feels like what you're describing with simplistic, and then the kind of like the picture just comes together and forms this beautiful little scene in front of your eyes. Go ahead, Andy, I know you had something to say.
I don't think this game would be as effective if it was with the more detailed sprites. Like, keeping it so simple, and then when you kick an enemy into, let's say, a buzzsaw, then that just all those reds fill the screen so rapidly. Like, again, for as frustrating as a game can be, at least for me at some points, but again, it's the addictive gameplay loop that keeps you kind of hooked in because you want to keep trying. It's like, it's so fast to retry after you die. It's like, well, I might as well give it another go. And then when you get past like a swath of enemies that are just in your way, then you see them bleeding everywhere. It's just so damn satisfying. It's like, this is why I keep playing until, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, or will I watch the election? I'm thinking, what's worse right now, with what I'm watching on TV or what's happening on my screen in my hands?
You know, I actually wonder over the years how many games that, or how many indie developers, I don't know if you maybe have had conversations, but how many you've actually inspired, you know, or like the game is actually inspired, because like when you think about some of the bigger games to hit, they do kind of borrow that instant, you know, retry. You know, you look at Katana Zero or Hotline Miami or like games like that, where it's just kind of like you go in, boom, retry. Okay, you fucked up, retry. Okay. And, you know, Meat Boy as well. Meat Boy, I think, might have been, how old is Meat Boy now? Is it 10 now? Feels yeah, like it might be.
It's old enough to make you feel old. That's what old
Yeah, is. That's exactly. That is, fuck, man, that is right. Somebody was saying something about how, like, some PlayStation 2 game is as old now as Mario was when PlayStation came out.
Nope.
Or something like that. And I was like, fucking Nas.
Don't tell me these things.
So it was something crazy like that. But that's yeah, to get back on track.
Daily Pixels, like on Switch 8 years after it originally came out, it has been really weird to meet people who are like, oh, I played this when I was a kid. I'm like, oh god.
Oh no.
I'm glad you like the game, but I'm a pile of like
just oh no.
So that thing of like a hard platformer with really fast restarts, I think the original source of that might be the original N that like plus and plus plus came from, which my friends Reagan and Mare made. And that was definitely another sort of influence on They Bleed Pixels, playing their stuff. Like we have a very different taste in terms of how movement physics work. Mm-hmm. But definitely that sort of thing of like hard, but sort of satisfying to sort of figure out your way through platforming.
Yeah.
So what is that like? Again, not to get too stuck on the whole, it's been 8 years part of it, but it's been 8 years since this game first came out. Now you're revisiting after all this time. What's it been like for you seeing it back in the spotlight after so much time has passed?
It's been interesting because like there was definitely like we were doing improvements for it for probably longer than we should have been after it was released. So it was a period where it was just still like a constant part of my life. Mm-hmm. But for like the last 2 or 3, maybe 4 years, I hadn't really played it. I basically booted it up when I needed to do like tech support for someone on Steam. So to suddenly go back and like play through the entire thing several times this year while testing, it was interesting. I was like, how much of this is gonna hold up for me? How much am I gonna be like, oh, I should have changed that bit? And like a surprising amount of it holds up for me. There's little things where I'm like, oh, I'd probably change this bit or this level a bit. I'd probably tune this AI a little bit different. Because it was like, it has been 8 years. I've made another game since. I've like grown as a designer. There's definitely things where I'm just like, oh, my sort of taste has changed in like subtle ways. It's been nice to like realize that, no, it still like plays really well. I still really enjoy playing through it. When I haven't done it like 2-3 days in a row, which does happen when you're testing, you just get into this thing where it's like, okay, well, we fixed that bug. Now I've got to go through the whole thing again.
Are you still as good as you were years ago when you picked that up again recently?
The platforming, I'm not quite as good at the combat. When it comes to some of the like rooms where we're sort of like, here's a wave of enemies, beat them within this time before the next wave of enemies shows up. Those rooms kick my ass pretty badly. But the core platforming, I feel like I still got down.
How does it make you feel?
So I actually do have, I actually have a question about that.
I don't mind dying in game.
That going back on this 8 years thing, like, does it, with it coming around again and finding kind of a new life, does it feel like, does it feel like your audience is saying, oh yeah, it's, you know, it's They Be Pixels, or is it, are you getting more people that are just seeing this game for the first time now that it's on a home console?
I think I've mostly seen people who are familiar with it talking about it. It'll be interesting, like it's only been out now for a little over a week. It will be interesting to see sort of people discover it fresh. But like, because a lot of people picked it up on Steam, there have been a lot of people who are like, oh yes, I get to buy this and play this again. And it's been interesting sort of seeing people revisiting it and realizing either they've gotten a lot better or that they've gotten a lot worse since they played it back in the day.
Are there any sort of Switch improvements or any features that you guys threw in there? Is it just a one-to-one, just they bleed pixels on the go? Did you guys experiment at all with that kind of stuff?
It's one-to-one, like because Andrew, the original programmer, is no longer in games, I kind of wanted to just go like, let's take the thing that we made together and just get it perfectly represented on Switch. I think if I were to revisit any of the mechanics or anything, I'd want to do like a sequel or a full remaster, something that was significantly different, especially
Sure.
since like our speed runners and such. I don't want to like mess up their ability to do their runs. They've been working on that one critical path for so long.
What would be cool? Like I'm just thinking. So now I have the DualSense now, DualSense controller, and all this haptic feedback, and you get your HD rumble with Switch. It'd be cool if like as the blood is landing on the character, that you can get it to feel like the drips of blood kind of going down the sides of the controllers. That would be a cool way to that would really be something Nintendo would wrap their arms around and enthusiastically give you a thumbs up about, I'm sure.
Get my rating a little bit higher.
Exactly.
I mean, seeing that much blood on a Nintendo system still makes me happy.
Ah,
Just
it always does.
it feels like it doesn't belong, but then it's like, no. Like the days of like blood codes are gone. Now it's just in there.
It's just there, baby.
And put a smile on my face.
This and Infernax, put them side by side. Watch the gory just mess happening in front of you. It's a beautiful thing.
I did have to change the color of the blood in the eShop page image. If you
Did
look at
you? Interesting.
Ah.
they requested that, and so yeah, I had to do that to comply with the ESRB. I feel like that's like sort of like another thing off the bucket list is like change the color of blood to like keep it
How does that conversation go? Do you just go like, have you played the game? Are you serious?
I think it's like where it can be seen. Like the rules are very strange. And like, I definitely also like having now like read all of the ESRB rules, I definitely see some AAA games with their marketing sometimes do things. I'm like, you technically can't do that. You're big enough, you can probably get away with it in a way that I couldn't, but I
What
don't
was that?
that.
That there was that one game that came out, Steven. Was it Carry On the Switch? It was like a vagina, basically, for the icon.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. That's basically what was on the cover, what was on that little icon, yeah.
that gets by without no one batting an
Well,
eye,
it's
but
not a, it's not actually a vagina. I
sure,
mean,
but still, it's like a Georgia O'Keeffe painting. You get some undeniable way what you're looking at.
everybody gets something a little different from
The more you realize that these things are basically random. It's like, what mood was the person in when they looked
Yeah.
at?
Which agent did you draw that day? Did you draw the one that has everything collated and notated, or did you get the guy whose desk is a complete shambles and disarray and was just looking to get the hell out of there? I
Well,
mean,
the reason
go ahead.
it is inconsistent.
Yeah, exactly. And we've heard that before too. Like we've heard where people cannot for the life of them get certified. They just have to keep changing things, and then when they change one thing, they find another thing, and then instead of giving them the whole list at once, they just give them the first thing they found. Then they fix that, and then they give them another th one thing. And like, I forget who it was on the show, but like they had, I want to say they were in certification for like 9 weeks, back and forth, going back and forth with just trying to. And this was an ESRB, this was Nintendo certification. This is just to get. Check all the boxes that they needed to check off for Nintendo themselves. And I think this was around the time that they had the, what was
It
that?
was we were pretty close to that, I think, in terms of what our cert
Really?
was. It was a pretty long one. And definitely is like different like the different regions will have different problems and stuff. Like we had to like correct a bit of Japanese
Oh,
at one point.
they look at that stuff. They look at like all the localization. Is it just the text of like the menus and stuff, or is it like the actual in-game stuff?
It was a we'd used a synonym for checkpoint in a spot
Wow.
checkpoint. So yeah, like it is weird and you don't know what's gonna you can't predict it.
Right.
It's one of the reasons why I think like a lot of indies won't like say a date until they've gone through that process, is that like you just don't know what's gonna crop up.
Yeah.
If it was leaderboard network stuff, which is, as I said, I think kind of one of the harder things to get sorted out on a console because they have such different rules than Steam. But there were also just weird things like that that we had to fix.
Weird. Yeah, it's strange. We just had somebody recently, didn't we, Andy, say we don't have we it's coming very soon, but like they didn't to switch very, very soon, but they didn't actually say because and I believe it was
Right.
offline. They said it's because they're still waiting on cert, but it's the game
There
was
was
finished. I forget
some
what game that
malarkey
was.
happening behind the scenes
Yeah.
there.
Yeah. And they did. Then I think it was the next day they announced the date and then they were out in like 13 days from there. It was pretty cool. But yeah, it's just interesting to see because like in the beginning of Switch's sort of life, when it really started to explode the indie scene, it was a top to bottom love affair. You saw indies were ecstatic with the adoption rate, the attachment rate that you were getting from these smaller indie titles onto the Nintendo Switch. And as this show kind of grew, and we've now interviewed, we got to be upwards of 150 now, developers, and the narrative's kind of changing. Like it's getting a little bit more back to, oh, sorry, it's getting a little bit more back towards Steam and towards consoles, towards PlayStation and Xbox with these Game Pass deals and PlayStation Plus and like all this stuff. And it seems like the love affair with Nintendo has kind of slowed down a little bit. I don't know if maybe in your inner circle you're hearing some things like that. Do you have any insight on what might be going on there?
I don't know of anyone who's particularly pleased with Steam in the last like 4 or so years.
Okay.
The market is so flooded there that like some games do well there, but like everyone's kind of aware that it's kind of a shit show.
Sure.
In terms of the other consoles, I think it's just that like anytime a market is new, it's a good place for indies to be. And as it matures, it just naturally becomes more crowded, becomes harder for those of us who don't have huge marketing budgets to show up and get noticed. And I think that's just it's like a natural thing that's happened with the Switch as it's progressed. I think they have sort of stumbled in terms of allowing people to do ridiculously low discounts. I kind of feel like no indie game should be sold for 12 cents. I just don't think that's a good thing for indies for that to be happening.
That's weird.
I haven't seen it recently, but there was a period like earlier in the year when I was checking those numbers and I'd see some incredibly low prices, like less than a dollar.
Yeah, I saw one. There was one game, I forget what it was. It was for 79 cents. It's it, it, it
What
was
kind of
weird.
games are these?
It was definitely like a mobile port of something. Like it was, I forget. It was that one that kind of looks like Skyrim, like a for the first per. It has like the skeleton as the little icon. I actually bought it when it was like $4. That was when we were buying like $20 in indie games a week and like talking about them on the show. I forget what the name of it was, but it was basically a dungeon crawler, and I saw that for 79 cents. It was maybe earlier in the year. It was bizarre. But yeah, I wonder if Nintendo themselves can, and they do spotlight a lot of indies. They do their indie showcases. They do, obviously since the pandemic, that has slowed down drastically, and they've kind of just almost disappeared. And like whenever we do get something from them, it's very last minute. It's very no fanfare. Here it is. Okay, goodbye. Maybe you know, when this pandemic is over and they could get back into kind of like that swing, maybe there is something that they can do to kind of curate and highlight the indies like they were doing in the first 18 months of the console.
I think also like the store was well set up when they had a very small number of games, and mm-hmm. now that they're a much larger number, it's not particularly well sorted out for discovery.
Yeah,
I think the discovery thing is a hard problem. I don't think any of the storefronts have done a particularly amazing job of it. But definitely, like, there's a lot of room for improvement there in terms of just finding games.
Yeah,
using any other than just doing like a text search when you already know the name of the game.
Yeah, and even sometimes with the actual name of the game, you can't even find it on certain stores.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. The revamp of the PlayStation Store. Yeah. Good Lord. Oh my word. It is terrible. So what's the future looking like for you? Like you got they Lead Pixels. You got Russian Subway Dogs that I know you're still wanting to get on the Switch. What's the future looking like? Do you have something brewing? Is it kind of, you're just in a wait and see holding pattern? What's going on?
Basically, I'm getting the Russian Subway Dogs ports done. Basically, all of my porting slowed down a bunch with COVID, not like partially because like it's been a stressful year and it's just hard to get stuff done in this environment, but also all of the consoles suddenly had to work remotely. And so whenever like you've got a question for any of them, it suddenly takes longer because they've been completely disrupted by this. So basically my plan right now is finish Russian Subway Dogs for the consoles we've announced it for, which is everything other than Switch, because I've got to do a big engine transition before I can even think about that. Because it's in an older version of Game Maker.
Okay.
Get those out, and I'm going to basically look at what's the sort of cash flow situation, and then I've got sort of two possible games to work on next. And
oh, cool.
One of them is a smaller one and one is a really big project, and sort of depending on what the cash flow is, pick which one to shop around. And it'll be like, it's not going to be another arcade game, it's not going to be another platformer. I like to do something different each time. So I've got two possible ideas, one of which is a spiritual successor to a early original Game Boy roguelike called Cave Noir that only came out in Japan, but there's a fan translation.
Okay.
And I don't know if you guys know much about the history of roguelikes on consoles.
Not much.
Not like the beginnings, but yeah.
So in Japan, like roguelikes have a longer history on consoles in Japan than they do here. And that was the Mystery Dungeon series, which became sort of the Shiren the Wanderer thing, but also like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, all of those things, that whole series. That was kind of when they sort of figured out the formula for doing roguelikes on consoles. KR is from before that by about a year. And it's full of a bunch of ideas I haven't seen anyone touch since. It feels really modern in terms of a lot of its like design ideas, in terms of like how it attempts to make sort of a fair roguelike to go through, that you can, you don't actually have to like fight every monster you come across to like gain experience. They remove a lot of those sort of like classic roguelike things that games still now do. And so playing it, I'm like, I'd love to play a new one of these. And so I started making notes on what a new one of those would actually look like. So that's one of the games. And the other one would be sort of a top-down action game. But I don't want to give too much away of what that idea is, because I haven't sort of shown anything publicly. Mm-hmm. There's some concept sketch stuff for the Cave Noir spiritual successor on my Twitter.
Nice.
But the other one, I've keeping it a bit closer to my chest.
You know, recently I've been playing a lot of horror games that only came out in Japan. And I find myself more and more realizing that a lot of ideas, like, these were amazing ideas that I have not seen since. And these games are about like 10, 15, even 20 years old at times. And I'm wondering, why haven't more people done games like this? So to see you talk about games that were only in Japan that haven't made their way across the pond, and now you're like, how can I take these old ideas that were good on paper and I can improve them with more modern sensibility? That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, no, I think like one of sort of the downsides of sort of the video game canon is we really only pay attention to like the things that were lucky enough to become hits in their era. And the more I explore that sort of backlog of stuff that either didn't make it here or weren't like big hits, the more you find things that were amazing that just didn't have that lucky break.
Right.
They're as good as stuff that's in sort of video game canon, your Metroids, etc. But because they were like made by smaller companies, the timing was wrong, whatever. Like there's so many ways that a game just doesn't get noticed as much as it should. They didn't become hits, and they're like the formula that they were working on hasn't been iterated on since, the same way that like the Metroidvania formula has.
Right.
Right.
You can trace like the first Metroid game to a game like a Hollow Knight and see how it's evolved over time through generations. But you can go back so far and say, this is like a very unique idea and it's a one of a kind. Why isn't there more of these? And I think if we go back, there's a lot of things we can improve on and make fun for today, I feel.
No, there's lots of unexplored little nooks and crannies in the history of games.
Thank God for the internet.
All right. Let's transition. Yeah. thank God for the internet, and also, God damn it. All right. Let's transition to everybody's favorite. What's that?
It's been a mixed bag, let's be honest.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's still young. It's still, you know, it's a baby.
It depends what day of the week you ask us.
Yeah. I mean, the telephone is still a baby. So, you know, we're only, good Lord, we're in the embryo stage of the internet. All right. So now we're going to transition to the rapid fire segment. This is where Andy and I are going to ask you a bunch of off the cuff questions. And some of them may be off the wall. And we want your rapid fire answers, the quickest answers you can give us, without overthinking it and overcomplicating it. But if you want to overthink and overcomplicate it, we're not going to stop you, and we never do. So it's all good. So I'm going to start us off. I'm going to start us off with a new question. Ooh. What is the best sauce for spaghetti?
Ooh, best sauce for spaghetti. One of those cheese sauces? I don't know.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Is this you referencing your recent pasta endeavor, Steven, with your carbonata?
Yes, I did have some carbonata pasta.
You made your own Alfredo sauce?
I did make my own Alfredo. It was delicious. It was delicious. I consider that a cheese sauce. It was a creamy, cheesy sauce. So.
All right, Miguel. Would you rather cut off one of your fingers or use your entire life savings for the person you hate the most to go on a spa vacation?
Hmm.
Do I get to pick the...
What was that?
We get to pick the finger.
Yes, you can pick the finger.
Sure.
Finger.
Yeah, all right.
We'll figure it out.
Which finger? Now I'm curious.
Who's like fake ones to put in place?
I think you could work around it. It would be weird. I had a neighbor that was missing like four fingers from a bandsaw incident. So,
I think the thumb just left. That's what I'm imagining in my head.
He had half a thumb. He had these three.
Half a thumb.
These three were gone this way.
Okay.
Like it was, he had three nubs here, and then his two fingers, his ring finger and his pinky. And on the other hand, I think it was his index finger and middle finger. Mm. I think he was holding something, like pushing it through a table saw, and he slipped and cut his hands quite horribly.
For most of the description of that, which was good. I'm really happy that the internet just decided to censor that for me.
Oh, it dropped out a little. That's good. See, the internet's good for some things. Okay, next question. Is cereal, breakfast cereal with milk, a soup?
Yes. It's a cold soup.
Hmm. Is double dipping at a party ever acceptable?
Rarely.
If you got it in your own plate, maybe.
No, if no one sees you.
Have you ever gone skinny dipping?
Yes.
Ooh. All right, we're getting spicy now, Andy.
Yeah.
Let's see where Andy throws this one.
Would you rather have your body found on a pile of sex toys or a pile of drugs?
Drugs.
At least you were having fun. Either way, you're having fun.
You mean, listen, it's debatable.
Would you rather have the power of flight or invisibility?
Flight.
Solid.
What was the last Halloween costume you wore?
A skeleton kigurumi, like one of those Japanese one piece.
Oh, wow.
What was the last game you started, played for 5 minutes, and said, nope, not for me?
God. I usually try to give more than 5 minutes to anything.
That's fair.
I honestly, I think that is in the weird, messy COVID year memories lost. I'm sure there's something that I picked up for, 5 minutes and went not for me, but I cannot remember what it would be.
Okay. That's fine.
Now, I'm going to encourage creativity on this one. So if you don't know the actual answer, please make it up as you go along. What does the acronym for SCUBA stand for? And please make it up. That's actually what I'm looking for.
Point.
How about this? You don't know what it means. So you tell me what you think it means.
Submariner underwater. Wait, no, there's a C there. I hate this. It's the worst. Last time, I'm terrible at it.
If you
arrange,
what would you rather have to remove before going to bed? Your eyes or your pangas, aka the old twig and berries?
Mm-hmm. And my eyes, I feel like that'd actually be convenient. I've got a window where too much light shines through, so that'd actually be a step up.
But what if your eyes are constantly seeing wherever you're putting it? You have to put it in a dark box somewhere. It's got to be wet and a little moist.
I'd have a nice box for them, and I'd just
put them in a black garbage bag. That's what you have to do.
And how do you find it too? That's the other thing. How do you find them in the morning? You're just try. Oh, here they are.
It's already. So honestly, it would be a minor change to my routine. Mm-hmm.
I guess so. Yeah, that is fair.
What is your favorite type of muffin?
Oh, that's a good one.
One of the cranberry lemon ones. Mm.
Those are pretty good. Those are nice. Those are very, very summery. They remind me of summer. Yes. What is the most offensive fruit?
Papaya. I hate those fuckers.
Very aggressive. It's very aggressive. These microaggressions are good. I like this.
How did the papaya wrong you? Where did it touch you on the doll? Show us. Would you rather play a fun game or have a great conversation?
Great conversation.
A lot like this one, right? Am I right?
Yeah, there it is. When there is an imminent threat of catching a debilitating virus and dying of the Black Plague, what is the first thing you're going to do when this is all over? The first, like, COVID no-no thing are you going to do when this is all over and we could finally enter the real world again?
Honestly, like, see my friends, maybe have them over, cook them dinner. Mm. Like, just social interaction. Mm-hmm. If they did not do it, will be real nice.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Have you ever slapped anyone in the face?
Ooh.
Ever slapped someone? I don't think so.
That should be on your bucket list.
Did you ever get into a fight in high school? And if so, did you win?
In high school, no, I don't think so.
Are dogs people?
No.
Are cats demons?
Also no.
Black beans or refried beans in your burrito?
Ooh. What'd you say? I'm sorry, you cut out there for a second. Uh-oh.
I think you left to get black a burrito.
Beans. Black beans, got him. There it is. Black beans, good.
Black beans.
Who is your favorite comedian of all time?
Can you not hear me?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello.
Oh, did you lose us? Yeah, we can see you and hear you. Yeah.
Well, you're frozen, but we could see your thing.
Hello.
I think he may have lost us. No?
I can hear you.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you too.
There you go. You're good.
Yeah.
We're back to normal.
Yeah, we're just having a lot of weird delay and such. Okay.
Don't ask me if I know how to get rid of this chat.
What was the new question?
There it goes. Who's your favorite comedian of all time?
Comedian of all time. No idea. I honestly don't listen to a lot of comedy.
Okay, fair. All right, Andy. Why don't you take us home on this one?
The last question?
Is that what we're doing? Yeah, let's do it. Let's wrap it up.
All righty, Miguel. This is it. This is the ultimate question. This is the lightning round. This is for all the stakes, all the money, cash money, fast money, Jeopardy, Wheel of Fortune. Mm-hmm. Deal or no deal. And the question is Steven or Andy?
I'm not answering this.
He is taking a stance.
Black beans.
Yes, black beans are the answer. Yes, this is very smart. This is very smart, Miguel. Very smart. Mm-hmm. That is going to do it for the show. I hope you guys had.
I don't know.
I hope you guys have had as good a time as we have on the show. Don't forget to check out our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/dualscreensstreams, where we record Dual Screens Gamecast on the weekends, mostly on Sundays. So just, give us a follow over there so you can check out when we're recording that show as well. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so by going to our new Twitter handle. Is at @dual_screens. It is no longer at NDS podcast. However, our Instagram is still at NDS podcast because it's a little bit more involved to change the name. So, but it will be changed as well. But just go to twitter.com and it's @dual_screens. I am at batchild27. Andy is at pants guy. If you want to support us on Patreon, you could do so by going to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our Patreon producer, Colton the Apprentice Nestler and FNH Paul. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. So please head over there, and as little as $1 gets you into our VIP Discord. And it gets you a bonus episode every month in which you vote the topic. So we do appreciate all of the support you guys give us there. If you want to join our Facebook group, it's facebook.com/groups/DS podcasts. And that's pretty much it. Now, Miguel, where can everybody find you? Where could everybody find the Bleed Pixels, Spooky Squid, and the whole nine yards? Okay. Oh, there you are.
I can block as there.
Okay, it's no problem. I'm asking you for your pitch. Where can everybody find you and everything that's going on over there, Spooky Squid and all that fun stuff? Internet is not being our friend right now, folks. So it is what it is. It's no worries. We love Miguel. Always welcome back on the show. Andy, thank you for being here. Thank you, listeners. And we know that the world is going, especially in the United States, it's just bananas. There is a lot of division. There's a lot of hate going on right now. There's a lot of negativity. And whatever side of the coin you're on, the thing that I say at the end of every episode has never rung more true. You don't have to agree with each other. You don't even really have to respect each other's opinions on certain things. You really don't. But what I do ask all of our listeners, all of our viewers, everybody that touches dual screens in any sort of way, what I do ask, he is back. I'm just doing a quick little sign off and then we'll get out of here. But, I just want everybody to know that it will always get better for everyone. And it still holds true that even though you may not agree with the person across from you, you should still, no matter what, be excellent to each other. Because that's the only way that things are going to heal. That's the only way we're going to get better. It's the only way we're going to start listening to each other and understanding each other and becoming united again. No, your opinions aren't going to just change overnight about somebody else. You're not automatically going to have different views of the world than somebody else, but you might actually find that you, have built better relationships because of it. So with that being said, we're going to get out of here. Miguel, if you are still here and the internet hasn't pooped out on us yet again, please tell everybody where they could find you before we say goodbye. This is the haunted question.
As soon as you start doing
that, it's the haunted question. There you go. You're here, though.
He's ready to go, but until you ask him.
No, as soon as that happened, you start doing like the weird slow down robot voice thing. Okay, let's see if we can get this out quickly and it actually records. I am Spooky Squid on Twitter. There's also a Spooky Squid Discord now, which is discord.gg/spookysquid. And Twitter, usually I'll have a pinned tweet with info on where to find the games and what sort of the current newest thing with Spooky Squid Games.
We got most of it, but don't worry, folks. The link, we're going to put the links to Spooky Squid's Twitter.
I was gonna be like, did you get any of that?
That like this?
We got the gist, and we will definitely make sure people can find you and can find the game and can do all that fun stuff. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Miguel. Thank you, Internet. We love you, and as always, please be excellent to each other.